The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
On this brand new edition of the best podcast in baseball, I'm joined all the way from St. Louis by my colleague and instant offense, Jeff Gordon. We're going to talk about Nolan Arenado's trip to Tampa and then his trip around the bases the next day. And we're also going to dive deep into what are the signals of spring that tell us the direction the Cardinals are headed. Very thrilled to be talking with Jeff Gordon this week on the best podcast in baseball. Jeff, would you like to say cue the music?
Cue the music.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by my colleague and friend, our columnist there at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLDay.com, and, of course, up there in St. Louis while I'm in Jupiter, it is, of course, Jeff Gordon. Gordo, how are you? Long time no see. How you been?
Well, the last couple of days, it's been not quite Florida, but it's been nice. So I was, give me about a week ago, I would have been a little sour, but it's been going well.
Yeah, I thought that was a courtesy of me to keep the podcast in Florida and not have to give you a weather report for what we're going on. Things are heating up for the Cardinals. They've started games. They've played a few. They went to the West Coast there, to the Tampa area. I got to go see Dunedin, Gordo, for the first time since the Cardinals called St. Pete home. That was what a charming place, man. What a cool setup Toronto has with this neighborhood ballpark. And then, you know, I had a nice time just walking around downtown Dunedin for an evening. It was really great. Have you been there? Had you had a chance to be there in the before times of Jupiter?
100 years ago, Derek. Yeah, it was like at that time, you know, if you went another 3 miles north, you were definitely into the marsh. For sure. But beautiful little setup there. We kind of reminded me of the old, back in the day, much bigger city, but Fort Myers had a neighborhood like a ballpark.
Yeah, City of the Palms. Loved it. Yeah, City of the Palms is a great, great, great ballpark. One of my favorite memories of spring training, several of them, but I got to sit there and watch a ball game. I was covering a Cardinals-Red Sox game, and a gentleman to my left sat down, and it was Stephen King. Got to talk with baseball with him for a while, and his beloved Red Sox, who at that time had broken the curse and were everybody's favorite team. So, I love City of the Palms. JetBlue Fenway South is fine. It's fine. It's necessary. Just like the Cardinals' new facility is necessary. Cardinals went up to Tampa and created somewhat of a buzz around Yankeeville by having Nolan Arenado join them there for that game. Maybe not as dramatic as social media would want you to believe. He headed up the night before the game, got to spend some time with two of his closest friends in baseball. That is, of course, his former Colorado Rockies teammate, DJ LeMahieu, who they talk just about daily. I mean, they're in constant conversation. Then, of course, his former Cardinals teammate Paul Goldschmidt and his Team USA All-Star teammate Paul Goldschmidt is now there, the first baseman with the Yankees. So Arenado had been on the schedule. He was given a choice where he could have 2 days off in a row and then rejoin the team when they came back to Roger Dean, or he could stay on his every other day schedule. He wanted to stay on that schedule. He told us from the beginning, Gordo, that he wanted to play and play a lot and get a lot of at bats. He's feeling it. He wants to see where his swing can take him. He feels very physically good. He played 6 innings in the field against the Yankees. He's just got a lot of bounce and pep to his play out there, and he wants to see what he can connect. And, of course, then the next day, as we're recording this, against the Miami Marlins, he hits a home run and a double in his first start at DH. So Nolan Arenado's playing well, moving well, finding his timing, finding his swing. He's kept his sense of humor through all this, Jeff, as he told me there in Tampa. He goes, you might have noticed that I got a few 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and then hit them. He also joked that if he were showcasing, he would not have picked his third game of the spring to do so.
Well, he's been a pro about this whole situation. You know, yeah. Whatever thoughts he had about, you know, any regrets he had about not jumping at the chance to join the Astros, he's let that pass. He came in with a great attitude, and you've covered sports a long time like me. You've seen a lot of guys in that situation not handle it nearly so well. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see how long Nolan lasts here for his own sake, for the rest of his career, for maybe his hope to land someplace where he has a chance to win. Obviously needs to have a great spring and get in and have a great season and set aside what happened last year, which, you know, was so much of a struggle from him, you know, physically, mentally, the grind of it, rough time for him. He's trying to set all that aside, and boy, he came in with the right attitude.
There's a real athleticism to his swing, you know, that looks familiar. You know, I talked to him last season about, you know, that search for that kind of one-handed finish and what he was, you know, what he felt himself doing. And he knew that it kind of felt odd when he had the two-handed finish. You know, he looks to be a lot freer and easier. He worked a lot on trying to be more explosive and agile. That's showing up in the field. That seems to be showing up at the plate. You know, we'll see how this unfolds. But the bigger thing is, you're exactly right, he's a pro's pro. I mean, you think just back in the past week, the stuff that, you know, there's a report about the Astros trying to reignite the, you know, conversations with the Cardinals. You know, what I understand about that was somewhat of an echo a little bit of something that had already happened. You know, Bregman signs with the Red Sox. It's natural for the Astros to go, well, what are our other options? And, you know, I was told by a source familiar with all that nothing was new and there wasn't even any movement that went to the player to say, hey, would you reconsider? And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of folks don't want this hanging over the team all the time. They don't want this conversation. They don't want every time he plays the Yankees or every time he plays the Astros to be some buzz and speculation about this is the time where teams that make millions of dollars and make billion-dollar decisions aren't going to make it on a single spring training game. Let's just get that absurdity out of the way. But, you know, they don't want that to even be like, you know, just hanging over them. But Arenado's handled it well. And really part of it too is just like his sense of humor that he's brought with him through all this. And, you know, it wouldn't shock. I mean, look, the other day, Jeff, he was playing left field for the Cardinals during BP. And he's out there running around, catching fly balls and taunting the other teammates and everything like that. And, you know, he's given Lars Nootbaar a bit of a hard time because that's Lars Nootbaar's position. And then Jordan Walker hits a long fly ball. And who goes up to the wall and then goes over the wall to catch it to rob? I don't know where you stand on whether or not it's a BP. If it's BP, is it a home run or not? Our late colleague Joe Strauss taught me that no one is running and no one comes home, so it can't be a home run in BP. So I've kind of sided with that, but Arenado stole whatever it was from him and had a blast doing it. And that's just been that way for spring, despite every move he makes, including a drive to Tampa to see buddies being like labeled as some kind of deeper meaning for the trade.
Well, he's a ball player and obviously feeling good physically coming into the season, fresh mind, fresh mm-hmm. body, hasn't beaten himself up too much yet physically, the way he plays like a maniac going after everything. So it's good to see. Fans want to see exactly that from their ball player, right? They want to see a guy in spring training having fun, enjoying to play the game, not being Anthony Rendon, who doesn't really like playing baseball apparently and physically can't hold up. Guys, they hate when that sort of attitude they see in the sport. They see Nolan doing his thing, enjoying it, acting like this. He's 25 again.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes. You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Well, he, of course, offers a window into this whole spring for the Cardinals. And, I think it's fascinating, right? He's their starting third baseman, which is not what the Cardinals had scripted. You know, Nolan Gorman is not there. Sonny Gray is headed towards being their opening day starter. That was something the Cardinals were prepared for that not to be the case. Wilson Contreras is playing well, moving around at first, learning a new position. And while the Cardinals, you know, did move him in position, they were open to moving him to another team. All of these things that were set to signal the quote-unquote reset, Jeff, haven't happened. And now the Cardinals have a different team than maybe they thought they would on Halloween 2024 as whatever Mardi Gras 2025 approaches. So what to you are you looking for signals of spring for how committed they are to – I mean, look, they've even changed names. They're no longer resetting. They're transitioning. So that's quote unquote. So what signs are you looking for how committed they are to this?
Well, I guess a big thing will be is if they can change the word back. If another team has a major pitching problem arising. Right. Already we've seen that. And all of a sudden, Eric Fetty is off for prospects. You know, you wrote about right. how he's an attractive target because he doesn't make a whole lot of money. This year is due to get, you know, a big Miles Michaels jump at some point.
Great comparison. You're right.
Going forward, right? So, you know, if somebody all of a sudden the Mets suffer still another injury with their pitching staff and they call and all of a sudden Eric's gone. And then, oh, by the way, you know, maybe the Yankees or whomever starts keeping a closer eye on Nolan Arenado. I mean, to me, it's going to be will they make it all the way to the opening day with all of these guys? Because things will start happening in the marketplace. And if they do, then maybe this thing is just more of a time release, sort of a transition instead of a hard reset. It'll be over time, because I do think
They will capsule. That's a great,
move some
that's
of these
a great
guys,
description.
Right?
That's just a great description. A time release, like reboot.
It's like the cold tablet. Just going to, you know, this yeah. time release.
No, that's perfect. That is a great example. Let's look at specific instances. All right. We'll talk this way. Let's start where the ripple effect of Nolan Arenado is most apparent. Center field. What are you looking at there in center field, Jeff? It's Lars Nootbaar now has to play more center field, not because Nolan Arenado's taking over for left field in batting practice, but because, you know, Nolan Arenado at third moves Gorman to second, Gorman at second moves Brendan Donovan to left, and Brendan Donovan in left means that Nootbaar is going to play center if the Cardinals go with their best offensive lineup. But what does that mean for Michael Ciani, the gifted defensive player? Or what does that mean for Victor Scott, who's had a very impressive spring, super impressive spring? A triple and a homer up there in Toronto, two steals against Miami, playing very well, looks just so fluid and explosive, both in the field and at the plate. So what does it mean for how that position to break down, and what are you looking for there?
Well, Victor Scott could upset a lot of things by just continuing to play like this. Now, of course, he's done it before. It doesn't translate to the regular season necessarily, but, you know, he's the most fascinating guy because there's some swagger there. There's obviously a great amount of athleticism. He's worked on a swing. great description that you've given our readers about the sorts of things that he's been working on, and, you know, you and Daniel with your coverage down there of where he's trying to go with himself. You know, it's a fascinating scenario with this team. You could have go with your maximum offense where, you know, Herrera's catching, Nootbaar's in center, but that creates a problem. You know, with you got to defend the running game, which is a group effort, but still, if Herrera has the same issues getting the ball out and getting the ball to second base, it's going to be a challenge. In center field, I mean, John Jay's working with him. I'm intrigued to see what he can do. Better reads, better jumps, great. But Ciani's just elite going to the gaps. and someday Scott could be that guy too as he improves his reads. You're still based on pitching and your ballpark is still big. So, yeah, there's a lot to decide. Now, if everybody hits, then it gets challenging for Ollie, right? But what really gets challenging, what if everybody doesn't hit, but you're still committed to getting guys their at-bats? You still need to get Jordan Walker his at-bats. You still need to get Nolan Gorman his at-bats. You still need to do that. You still need to make that commitment. But what if all, you know, Ciani's great in the spring, Scott's great in the spring, Newpar looks like, you know, he's, you know, everybody's going. And then it starts getting tricky.
That's a problem that they'd like to have, though, right? The question, though, then becomes, and I think this is the crux of it for me, Gordo. If everybody hits and that solves the problem for them, then you're suggesting that they'll have a good offense because everybody's hitting, and a performing offense likely is a winning offense because that's what was missing from last season. But do they stall any development as a result? And what is the priority here? We know what priority 1, 2, and 3 was for the Cardinals, but now they're into the season. So what is priority 4 for the Cardinals? Is it to prepare for the future? Or, I mean, if they start producing, like you just said, are they just in the now and let's see what it goes?
Some folks, I'm sure you've had this issue in your chats as well, say that would really mess up the plan, wouldn't it, if they were competitive? Because what if they were really doing pretty well and the division is what it is? The Reds don't quite materialize once again, and the Cubs have issues that weren't anticipated, and the Brewers finally catches up to them, the fact they've lost so many players. And what if they're just rolling along two and a half months into the season? Teams are calling about guys, but you're thinking, you're looking up at the standings, you're in it, and you're trying to sell tickets, which is a whole other issue, another thing that they're certainly going to have to pay attention to. So, yeah, I mean, that would be fascinating. I still think ultimately this comes down to getting ready for 2016 and beyond, or 2026 and beyond. But what happens if people screw it up by just overachieving or in just many cases, getting back to who they were previously?
That was the angle that I took. And I'm not sure it hit. I wish it did. I'm not sure it hit with readers as much as I hoped it would. Was that first meeting where it's Bill DeWitt, John Mozeliak, and Oliver Marmol all standing in front talking about the season ahead. And usually, you know, it's this description of the championships behind. It's the rings in the room. It's the Hall of Famers who are there. It's the expectations of championships in the pursuit of a 12th World Series title. And this year it was not going to be. You know, it's all a different conversation. But the story that I wrote and wanted to try to drive into our readers was this notion that, like, they've had their say all winter long. The front office has talked all winter long. Ownership has talked all winter long. They did everything. They reduced payroll. They talked about a reset or transition. They said they're investing in the minor leagues. That was their say all winter long. That first workout of spring, when Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, Nolan Arenado take the field, now it's the players' say. And I brought it up on foul territory again today with Eric Kratz, this notion that, like, look, the front office has set out its plan. And some of it, some of the big parts of it, it didn't accomplish. But some of the, like, beneath the surface things, it's really going on. Bigger staff, more money in minor leagues, collecting of young players and draft picks. All these things are happening. And they just want, you know, this season to kind of give them a breath and to kind of look at it. And it's like, well, that's all well and good, but the best laid plans are now in the hands of the players. And is there a player in there that isn't going to say, man, I would really like to spoil this plan by going out and winning? Like, how crazy would that be if Sonny Gray goes, it's the plot of Major League right down to they're doing push-ups in the infield, Jeff. That's what's happening here. And that's the story that I wanted to try to get through, was this notion that, like, all winter long, all offseason long, the voices we heard the loudest from the Cardinals were the front office, agents that the front office were dealing with, and ownership. And once the spring starts, and once these games get going, and once the regular season arrives, it's the players who have the say. That's what's on the horizon. And I'm eager to see what they do with it.
Well, yeah, and let's look at some of these players, right? Sonny Gray will fight you to the death. You know, he's ultra competitive. Wilson Contreras, super competitive guy, feels better doesn't have all the injuries he suffered behind the plate, wants to reestablish himself as a as an everyday guy and a hitter, and just being healthy and being able to have fun playing the game.
He wants to go out and crush baseballs. He wants to go out and hit like four. He joked with his brother he's going to hit 62 home runs.
Yeah, he wants to go out and have some fun and hit the ball. Arenado wants to get his game back to where it was, and he's certainly one of the best players of his generation. Then you've got Walker trying to get back to at least to where he was as a rookie, which was pretty good for, you know, 20 going to 21. That you want Nolan Gorman to go. He wants to get back to hitting home runs and just figuring out the high fastball. You know, Mats was a good pitcher until he wasn't with the Cardinals because of injuries and other things, and he's put in the work. Fetty wants to get back to where he was the first half of last year for the White Sox. Go down the list. It's not the most unreasonable thing to say that if everybody just went back to being who they were not that long ago, and maybe in Steven Matz's case it's been a couple of years, that you would then have the makings of a team in this division that could push for 90 wins in this division that keeps you in the chase. It could happen, and that would be really weird after everything that started unfolding at the end of last year.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be something that the Cardinals wouldn't kind of wonder about. You know, I talked with some members of the front office, and they did say one of the things that they want to do is see what happens when they alleviate this pressure and expectations that have greeted these young players. What happens when they alleviate that, and does that make them better? Was the clubhouse and these expectations a little bit suffocating over the last few years? And did it weigh on a team or weigh on individual players in a way that dragged them and their performance down or backward? They're eager to see if they can kind of like profess and talk and describe and take away that the discussion of those pressures, if that actually leads to some of them meeting those expectations.
Well, you're reporting again on some of these individuals, you know, Nolan Gorman, mentally, what last year was to him, how difficult that was. Jordan Walker, a guy who wants to have fun playing the game, is a joyful individual, not having fun playing the game, right? So those two guys commiserating quite a bit. And, you know, those are the two prime examples, right? I mean, Jordan's really young and Gorman is still relatively young in his career. There's so much there. And yet, again, the expectations and the success they had, which raised the expectations. But man, it's tough out there. Ask Cody Bellinger. It's tough out there. A lot of guys who are, you know, a guy plays at MVP level and things can happen to him and he's got to rebuild. You'd love to see as a fan, if you're a fan, just those guys having fun. It's real easy to see Jordan Walker when he's having fun and he's joyful. You can see, you'd like to see Gorman have fun too. And he's such a quiet, more introspective individual, but man, those will be two guys to watch this year for sure in the spring.
Gorman has a very beneath the surface biting sense of humor. So if that comes out, maybe there's some better coverage that I could do or quotes I could get to bring that out. It was pretty clear that, he's going to get a lot of at-bats. It's clear that the Cardinals are going to find a way to get Donovan a lot of at-bats. It's very clear, obviously. The Cardinals have committed a lot and plan to be very patient and see what happens with Jordan Walker. All those three guys are very prominent in their plans and will be prominent in at-bats, along with Lars Nootbaar, however this sorts out. Less so are a few places on the pitching staff. And, Jeff, I know how much you pay attention and how much you are intrigued by player development and youth on the rise. I'd really like to get your sense of how you think they ought to look at McGreevy. Like, if McGreevy could impact this team as a reliever or be on the team as a long reliever or be on the team as some other kind of reliever, how do you weigh that against maybe him being a better starter and actually doing that in AAA?
Yeah, I mean, for me, his mix of pitches, in which he's trying to make his mix of pitches even better, as in your reporting from Jupiter, to me, he's a guy that is more of a starter profile because he will be control, mix of pitches, a cerebral guy on the mound, has good enough stuff, but he's got to be sharp and he's got to have command, which he's had. To me, that would be difficult to do in out of the bullpen. Even in a sporadic long relief role, keeping him sharp, which to me is a top priority because he just can't lean back on a 98 mile an hour fastball when he really needs one necessarily. I think he's that little bit of success he had is intriguing, but it was a long run up to get to that point where he really pulled it all together at the professional level. So, yeah, I mean, I think Quinn Matthews might be a more logical guy because of his rapid ascension to think where he's a plug and play guy for your rotation. Michael, I would hate to see him stuck in a role where he couldn't, we would get lost. I mean, totally different person, different pitcher, but Zach Thompson got bounced around role to role, and you saw what happened, and he's had to go back and rebuild from square one.
What about Matthew Liberatore? I wrote about him for the paper. By the time folks are listening to that, it's already appeared on the website and hopefully in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. But I think, I made the argument that he kind of captures this discussion, this question of short-term versus long-term. I wrote that he's nearest the center of the tug of war, which between what are you doing? Are you preparing for the future? Are you deploying for the now? I don't think there's anybody who would go, okay, Matthew Liberatore is one of their best relievers now. And if they're going out to win games, they're going to need a good bullpen, and he's a part of it. But if they're looking at the future, his ceiling might be highest as a starter. So how do you look at that decision that they have to make? Like I said, he's retired all 12 batters he's faced. He's been up there with his velocity. He's shown depth with his breaking ball and some consistency. Oliver Marmol described him as a man on a mission, and it's impossible to ignore. But how would you make that call, Gordo? How would you make the call about whether or not you go with the now of him being a reliever versus the maybe he's a starter when they're good again?
Well, this has been a discussion for the whole organization, right? Because they've had a history when they were in the hunt of bringing guys in relief roles to get them in, to get some value right away and keep a team in the chase. Mm-hmm. But then you limit some of the development. In the case for a guy like for Matthew, you want to see him, again, develop the full arsenal. If he's going to be used in relief, maybe there's more focus on him with a different pitch selection, trying to make sure they maintain a certain level of velocity and just a different approach to pitching. I think he profiles, I think like McGreevy, a guy that can, definitely I see that starter piece to him. I've been flipping around on some other guys like a Tink Hens. I just don't know physically if he's going to be able to hold up as a starter because he hasn't in the minors yet. You could see where his electric arm and stuff could play over a couple innings if he's not going to have that workhorse type of build. Because Matthew looks like the kind of guy that could just go out and eat up a bunch of innings, and he's just like he's been able to come out of the bullpen over and over again, right?
Yeah, he's got
a durability side that you like, and at pitching, where I think he developed. You won't develop fully as a reliever, right? Because you're just going to come in the circumstance that you're in, unless it's just a long relief mop up where you can tinker. You're coming in to get some work done,
right?
And it's impressive. Sometimes you're fooled. Like I thought, Plante. Well, there's a guy just going to be a reliever. No,
he proved. Well, he flipped the script. He changed things, but he had to go back to the minors to do it, right? And he had to get that time. If I'll give you two scenarios, if the Cardinals have Matthew Liberatore as their setup guy, where is their priority? Is it on this year or is it on the future?
Yeah, they would just, to me, that would say that the message would be like, well, we just don't think he can make it as a starter.
Really?
Well, because to your point, I mean, he's at a certain age where they've got to decide. He's got to prove what he wants to do. They have to decide to commit to him. He's been a prospect for a long time. He's been a pro for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's been in the big leagues for a while. It's time, right? And well, some guys flipping, but,
I'll give you the other scenario. He's in AAA, and he's a starting pitcher there, starting every 6 days on the regular, not every 5 or 6 days, depending on how the schedule goes because they have the Mondays off. But he's there, and he's starting. Is that a sign that the Cardinals are willing to take the risk that he doesn't stall and never contributes?
Yeah. The very thought of him, you're thinking he would actually have to go back once again. To me, psychologically, I don't know how – I think he's at the point in his career where that would not be – you might lose him at that point.
Gosh. I mean, but so what a dilemma then for the Cardinals. Yeah. I mean, like I was talking with the manager a little bit and, you know, and I was asking him about this and he kind of pushed back on me. He said, well, which one would you do? And I said, well, I would like to know more information about like, what do you get and what do you risk if you focus on the future and go with the starter? I said, because my sense is I've seen guys who have been in the bullpen and emerge as starters. I've also seen guys who want to be starters and spend, we've both seen it, Trevor Rosenthal, Ryan Helsley. They talk about being starters, but they're out there in the bullpen. You know, Carlos Martinez was in the bullpen, came out, started for a while. Adam Wainwright obviously famously did. So it's isolated instances that stand out. But it's, you know, Lance Lynn did, all these other guys did. It is possible to do, you know, how much staying power they have then relates to how the transition goes, which is going to be the case, whether they're a starter in AAA. And the question is how they transition to the majors or versus they're a reliever in the majors, how they transition to the rotation. The question doesn't change. I said, but you know, this answer used to be easy for the Cardinals. It used to be easy. It used to be now. It used to be like, Wuda, how does he help now? How does he help now? How does he help win games now? What does he do now? You know, this is it's not really the question that you have with a position player when it's like Colton Wong, who's on the bench and not in the lineup. He could help you now, but he's not playing now, so he's off to AAA. Or Jordan Walker. He could help you now, but he's not helping you win now, and he's not doing himself any good being on the bench, so he's off to AAA. It's a little different with the pitcher where the answer was always, how do they help you now? And the Cardinals have always been, how does he help us now when it comes to the pitcher? What role does he impact now? But the question has changed for them. And I'm trying to learn their viewpoint there, Jeff, and understand how they might go through this. But man, it was a whole lot easier to answer a question about Matthew Liberatore when the answer was for the Cardinals was always, no, he can help you now. And you're trying to win now, so he'd be here now.
Yeah, I still think at the end of the day, this thing's all going to still come down to playing for next year. However, it may be a little unusual, the path to getting from here to there to this, where this really does become more about next year, unless a lot of things happen quickly to change the management's viewpoint. You know, one thing that strikes me, I think we're seeing more and more like thought about six-man rotations.
Yeah.
And you know, and then maybe even some piggyback work to some degree because of the use of guys as openers, and maybe they expand that opener role for a few more innings and it really does become more of a piggyback. So maybe the model of pitching will make it easier for them to resolve all this mm-hmm. in terms of how you use everybody. But again, I think you do. I think your point about Matthew's upside is, to me, if he's a reliever, he's just another guy. Because he profiles more as a middle type reliever versus a guy that's going to come in and step on somebody in the ninth inning, right? So given that, and it's all about the future, and developing pitchers is tough, and you're all those young pitchers you had last year in the minors that had a future, they all got hurt, every last one of them, mm-hmm. except, you know, Matthews shot up through the carnage of guys being out at different levels. They all got wiped out at some point. Except for McGreevy got, you know, stayed with it and made it to the big leagues. But so many of those guys got hurt. Roby, Hintz, you know, those two critical guys at the AAA. You know, to me, stardom, live with the results. It's, mm-hmm. you know, and understand that unless he completely collapses, and then you'll know, look, if he can't do it this year, then maybe he's just, maybe you reevaluate him, but you need to know.
There's something to that. There's, you know, if you don't need him, because your focus isn't on closing games, holding games now, but you think he has tremendous upside for when you are ready to compete, then there's a definite argument to be had that that's when you set it up for. We began by talking about the infielder who's in camp that few people expected to be in camp, who also went to Tampa. And apparently, you know, because the Yankees rarely travel their stars, evidently no one should or something Grapefruit League etiquette. I don't know, but you know, I've seen a lot of, I saw a lot of speculation about that. It's not all that unusual for the Cardinals to, you know, to travel a star. You know, Nolan has not traveled all that much in his time with the Cardinals. But let's also keep in mind that, you know, in two of his, what, four springs with the Cardinals, they didn't go anywhere but this little radius down here because there was a pandemic and because there was a lockout. So the schedule was condensed and there were no voyages to Tampa. There were no trips over to Fort Myers there for him to go on. It's kind of limited. We haven't had much opportunity, and nor has he ever had, you know, the two closest friends to him there with the Yankees. So we started our conversation talking about Nolan Arenado and the trips he made. Big part of spring is obviously his presence here and what that means for others. And that brings me to the question along this theme of what do you do for development? What choices do you make? And I present to you, Jeff Gordon, the case of Thomas Sagesi. Right-handed batter, plays a lot of positions, is an infielder. What do you do? Is he best served by being on the bench? Is he best served by playing shortstop in AAA? Where does he fit in this?
Yeah, I think I want to see if I'm in the front office, I do want to see him find another level at AAA. And barring a change in direction with the roster, which would be, to me, I almost would take a couple things, because I'd hate to see him wasted in just a utility role too, right? There's a bat there. His pitch selection, his discipline needed work. He went to Arizona Fall League, put in the work. There's a ton there. I mean, this guy dominated the Texas League. Offensively, he's got bat to ball skills. Alec Bertelsen has bat to ball skills, and you've seen it evolve. They stuck with Alec, and Alec got over the hump, became a pretty good player for this team. So I think there's a future there, and I think the fact he's multi-positional is important. And you don't want him to rot, but you know you do want. You know, I think you want to see progress. I think there's more he can do. At AAA, even if he has a tremendous spring, I wouldn't be as worried about his development, because he did have a transition challenge when he got to AAA last year, and he showed promise at this level, but it was just such a small sample. But you start getting into the middle of the season and he's tearing it up at AAA, you know, and this guy deserves to play. Now, where does he fit? And he's got a guy coming up behind him who's a middle infielder who's going to be on the team in 2026, right?
Yeah, Weatherholt. You're talking about JJ Weatherholt.
He might see him at the end of this year. You never know, right?
I don't know about shortstop for him. He's working at it. Right. Obviously, Mason Wynn is there, and Mason Wynn has it in his ability to win a gold glove there and has a superior arm, just a lot to like about him at shortstop. But Weatherholt at second base, that could be, you know, a future Cardinals infield of, I don't know, Wilson Contreras, Alec Burleson at first base, J.J. Weatherholt at second base, Mason Wynn at shortstop, and Nolan Gorman at third. Boy, I don't know how good that is, but a future Cardinals second infield of Contreras or Burleson at first, Weatherholt at second, Win at shortstop, Nolan Arenado at third, and Nolan Gorman at DH. Now that's a better team, right?
Oh yeah, I have no question. And just imagine the difference in fielding. If for some reason Nolan stays somehow and plays to his level, and all of a sudden the team's not looking to pay him to go away, which is what teams wanted the Cardinals to do.
Yes.
A significant amount of money, which is, by the way, if you're Nolan Arenado, I mean, do you really, if you're looking for a motivator, the fact that
he's not lacking one. Yeah.
Teams are asking the Cardinals, could you just throw in some money? Because we don't think this guy's worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is the second time that's happened to this guy. And we saw how he played for the Cardinals when he got to the Cardinals after what happened in Colorado, right? We saw how he played.
With the ferocity.
Kind of the most valuable player. So, yeah. And so it is fascinating. I will say this, boy, how about long term, Weatherholt and Wynn? Weatherholt can fill in a little bit when Mason needs a day off. But having those two guys in the middle, and if in our lifetime, Derek, the Cardinals decide, you know what, we're really going to make sure that we keep players for a while that we really believe in. We're going to go back.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
You know, and we're going to be proactive about that. Because imagine if those two guys hit their potential. It's such a changer for the franchise.
Yeah, those two guys are in a good spot. They're positioned well, if you will pardon the pun. But there are other guys, and you mentioned them, and let's kind of close here. I mean, are there young guys who aren't just signs of the Cardinals' dilemma between the future and the now, the short term and long term? Are there also some young guys that you're looking at for, like, they're here this spring to prove it, or the Cardinals are going to move on?
Well, I mean, the biggest guy, because I think Walker's going to be okay to some level. But Nolan Gorman, what happened to him and the fall off and the positional situation, not knowing where you are with Arenado at the moment, if he's going to be here, and if does change things. Nolan's got to he's got to have a statement season, right? Because there's just too many other pieces involved. Because you have another guy who can play third base who's crushed the ball at AAA. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be your third baseman. Yeah. So there's so much for me. He's of all the pivotal guys, he's the most pivotal, because it just for him to be to get that lost after having as much time in the majors as he had, and mm-hmm. with ups and downs and streaks, but for him to get as lost as he did, and the lack of confidence and the indecision at the plate, and just having all the thought process and to walk the mental aspect of what happened to him. To me, it's the most fascinating story of the spring.
What about Zach?
He's a great guy. You want to see it work out. What a pleasant man. So, and he's got so much promise. Hits the ball so hard, Derek. Would you like to just hit the ball hard once? And you're a good ball player back then. Hit the ball like him once.
Not like that. No. I don't even know what it's like to hit a golf ball that hard. You're right. He's a first round pick. And then there's another first round pick that might fit this too, in Zach Thompson. I mean, what an interesting moment, for him too, this spring, both of them, Cardinals have invested a lot in them, money and time, on their upside. And if neither, kind of leaves this spring with some kind of traction or some kind of, grip, or foothold, that's probably a better way to put it, some kind of foothold on the roster and foothold on the depth chart, then it's a fair question, then where do they go next?
Yeah, and he's been around a while, right? And so this is he's now a guy that's just caught. He's a tweener. He's caught tweener between rotation, bullpen, tweener between AAA and the majors. You remind you of some of the guys that have come through the Pirates organization that couldn't quite get over the hump, and in part because the atmosphere wasn't conducive to winning.
Right.
It's just such a fine line. You've seen so many guys come out with he looks like a pitcher, right? I mean, he just looks the part, and he's got the build. Mm-hmm. He commands himself, is there enough velocity for him to be a power pitcher? Is the command enough? The secondary pitches, all those things. Can he put it together? Can he find that mix? They all go back and they work in the winter, in mm-hmm. his case with his former coach, to try to the mechanics, the grip, the movement on the pitches, the shape of the pitches, all those things. Can he find it? Because, man, he just looks – if ever there's a guy that looked the part of a successful pitcher, it's Zach.
There's an argument to be had, Gordo, that everybody here, everybody in the clubhouse, everybody – on the roster, everybody on the 40-man is in a prove it or be moved season, because there's going to be a new guy in charge of the front office. I've heard it described as a year-long job interview. I've heard it described as a year-long audit. I've heard it described as, my last year to prove. I've heard it all described. I've heard it as probably my last year here from some folks. That's such an interesting dynamic. Because, we probably don't mention it enough that, with all the focus on what Heim Bloom is doing for the minor league and what he's doing to build up a staff there and the moves he has yet to make, eventually he'll name and hire a general manager, for example, to work with him, a lieutenant to be in that spot. But with all of that being said, when John Mozeliak's contract expires and he moves on, the guy making the call on the players will be Heim Bloom, and he'll have a full season to add to the data he has now about these guys. And if some of them don't work out, it'll be very interesting to see how quickly he moves on from the potential that this front office has said these guys have, the potential that this front office has invested in, the potential that this development group and this front office and baseball ops put the money into, all of that, which buys them a certain amount of patience with their guys, how much that is over and not a guiding light for Haim being committed to guys who weren't part of the baseball ops when he oversaw it.
Yeah, think about all of it, Derek. The history of the franchise, promoting a lot of people from within, having a fair amount of stability with personnel on the baseball ops side, all of that, right?
Yeah.
To somebody who's brought in a lot of outside eyes to the already.
Yeah.
And, you know, the former players who may not feel welcome anymore, or all the legends. I mean, everything about the organization, which was very insular, it's not going to be that way. I mean, that doesn't mean nobody's going to be welcome back to Jupiter next spring, but it's just going to be – there's going to be very little nostalgia, very little loyalty, any of that. I mean, it's just – they're going to make some hard decisions, and everybody's got to earn it, man. And so it's all these guys who've been around forever. It's just what happens when you have a really bad year and you don't quite come back the next year, and people are doing things differently in the sport, and you get stale, and here we are.
Very interesting. You know, the Cardinals are willing to give a little in the standings, but the performance of individual players or strides forwards in individual players, if that doesn't happen, could be in for a very volatile November. The roster could be. There could be a lot of churn as they go to a new look. And we'll have to see if ownership is on board with that, because it wasn't too long ago that that Bill DeWitt Jr., the chairman of the team, was stressing the idea of the legacy Cardinal. I don't really know how, even as an example, the Hall of Fame, the team's Hall of Fame, I'm not sure how geared it is to roster churn. They would like some redcoats to emerge from this generation. And if they're flipping over guys every 3 years, 5 years, 6 years, may not have the opportunity. There might be a bit of a lull in producing the guys who are here long enough to kind of catch on in that way. It becomes more of a system and less of a star. You know what I mean? Like you're rooting for like that the rotation of players will do it, not just will in aggregate make the performance of a star, as opposed to one personality you can cling to.
Well, you certainly don't want to go to the extreme of Gabe Kapler's success with the Giants that 1 year. I think they used the 606 players. Some guys had made 47 trips back and forth to AAA. They had a 20-man pitching rotation staff because they all just kept coming and going.
Tampa Bay, have they had a guy there who's a star? I mean, Evan Longoria, right? He was there for a while, but everybody else kind of just arrives, rises, performs, moves out. Not a whole lot of long-term Rays, for them to build a Rays Hall of Fame around.
Well, it's going to be a challenge. And, of course, you got to sell tickets. And I think how much will the public reaction this year?
Great question. And how much will it influence? Let's see what pressure points the fans can provide. So there it is. The front office has its plan. The front office has the heir apparent. The players now have a say. And then we're all eager to see what the pressure the fans put on it. So really interesting. Jeff, I look forward to seeing you in person here in a few weeks. We're getting closer, about midpoint of spring training. The opening day is on the horizon. Cardinals Twins at Busch Stadium, less than a month away. The Cardinals have their Grapefruit League season to finish, the sprint to the finish, and then off to Memphis for the exhibition game. I trust that I will see you there for the opening day. You'll be right there manning the keyboard, ready to opine on whatever happens. We will not draw huge conclusions that day. We won't cover it like it's a college football game. It'll be a big deal. I mean, it'll be telling. There's a lot of questions still facing the Cardinals and a lot of answers that they've yet to find themselves. But as they do, you can read all about it in the constant Cardinals covers there at the Post-Dispatch, and hear all about it here at the Best Podcast in Baseball. Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. Please be sure to subscribe and rate and review the podcast. That is how we know that we're reaching the community and we can react to what the community expects from this podcast. Gordo, it's good to catch up. It's been great to you know, been a few weeks since we last chatted, since we did a vidcast. So it's good to catch up, and I will pester you soon for us to do this again.
I'll be looking forward to it. Maybe we'll have so many more answers by the next time. Who knows? Yep.
That is St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Jeff Gordon. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Gordo. How you doing? You got deadline here in 45 seconds.
We're all good. We're all good. Yeah, I'm under control.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.